The schedule for each week is set up by all of the faculty on Sunday nights. And they sit around for about an hour and a half trying to get all this in. And I saw the schedule for the week, and I thought it was pretty heavy. So I thought I'd open up my funny file and give you a little comic relief. Tonight, I'm going to do some readings of material I've, or experiences I've had. And I'm always on some kind of cause, and I'll leave that till the last. Next Thursday night, after tomorrow, I guess, I'm going to do a couple of illustrated readings. One of them is ecclesiastical bird watching. Some of you have probably seen it. It's kind of a fun thing. And the other one is Lafcadio, the lion that shot back. And these are both illustrated. The last one by our daughter. Tonight, I think I have about four readings, or maybe it's five. The first one, and it sort of explains why, one of the reasons I quit being a dean. One of the things that you're doing as a dean, you have to get money. And one of my last attempts at this failed, and I'll read it to you. Dear Dean Busted, we wish to thank you for your letter and pictures which we recently received. However, we'll not be able to use your body in our centerfold. On a scale of 0 to 10, your body was rated a minus 2. The rating is done by a panel of women ranging from age from 65 to 72 years. We tried to have our panel of women in the 25 to 35-year-old bracket rate you, but we could not get them to stop laughing long enough. Should the taste of American women ever change so drastically that they would want you in the centerfold, you will be notified by this office. In the meantime, however, don't call us. We'll call you. Sympathetically, Amanda Smith, editor of Playgirl magazine. 11 years ago, next Sunday, I slipped a disc, and I was in far worse shape than I am right now. My back's bothering me, but since I'm afraid of surgeons, so I just turned in myself in the hospital and laid flat on my back for about 8 days. And that's a terrible thing for me to do. So while there, you had a lot of time to think, so I put down about 15 things that you can do to kind of lighten things up while you're in the hospital. And I've circulated these through the years. And somehow you might gain something from it if you're ever so indisposed. The first one is to play Indian chief. Set the TV in the middle of the bed, pull out the rabbit ears, and make a teepee out of the sheets, and start a fire in the bedpan and practice smoke signals. The second one, you print a sign, "Help, I'm a prisoner of a mad doctor," and tie it to a urinal and throw it out the window and see how long it takes the police to arrive. Three, rearrange the furniture in the room to make it more homey. Four, call the head nurse and ask her if she's in charge of heads. Five, play 20 questions with your roommate, but don't think of anything, just keep saying no. Six, I wonder my roommate left before I did. Six, dump your apricot juice into the urine specimen bottle and your prune juice into the commode. Seven, organize the rest of the patients in a mass sit-in on all Johns and commodes to ban all prune juice and enemas. When the nurse's aide comes pussyfooting in at 4:15 a.m. to bring fresh water and take your temperature, jump out of bed and holler boo as loud as you can. Nine, call up the admitting office and admit something. Like putting prune juice in your commode. Number 10, drag yourself to the nearest telephone, call the hospital disguising your voice. Say you're a close friend of, and thereby find out what your real condition is. And also find out when you're going to get out, if at all. 11, write friends' names on all coupons that you can find in all available magazines and newspapers and send them in. 12, get whoopee cushions for visitors' chairs. 13, when too many visitors get too noisy and stay too long, call the nurse to bring in the commode. 14, when the visitors leave and the nurse pulls the curtain around you, leaving you alone with the commode, with instructions to ring the call button when you're finished. Don't ring it, but see how many hours, days, or weeks it takes them to discover it. And the 15th one is, at the height of the visiting hour, put your hospital gown on backwards with the ties in the front and drag yourself down the main hospital corridor. As Confucius might have said, when hospitalization is inevitable, relax and enjoy it. Next one is a slight modification of something Bruce Gunnarsson wrote in the Luther. I kind of liked it. It's, you can always tell a Lutheran. There has always been a rather sizable body of opinion which contends that you can always tell a Lutheran, but you can't tell him much. I've really never agreed with this point of view. In fact, I believe that most people really don't know how to tell Lutherans at all, and wouldn't know a Lutheran from a Lithuanian unless they wore identifying haircuts. This, of course, is a problem that cries out for a solution, and so, to do my part, I hereby present a list of criteria by which we Lutherans can be more easily identified. Lutherans sing, "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," better than anyone else. Lutherans generally have less money than Episcopalians, but more money than Baptists. Lutherans have more fun than Mormons and Seventh-day Adventists. Lutherans not only make better coffee than almost anyone, but more of it. Lutherans believe it is wrong to vote for a political candidate on purely religious grounds, unless, of course, he's a Lutheran. Lutherans believe in the importance of confession and frequently confess their sins, particularly when confronted with the evidence. Lutherans generally are suspicious of pastors who have spotlights trained on their pulpits. Lutherans trust other Lutherans except in matters of judging what is best for the Lutheran church. Lutherans don't like to meet Roman Catholics who go to church more often than they do. Lutherans believe that evil movies should be banned or censored. They also believe that no one should have the right to tell them what movies they can or can't see. Lutherans believe in ecumenism because they want everyone else to become just like Lutherans. Lutherans listen to sermons with great interest, except when they are thinking about something else. Lutherans believe in miracles, but expect them only during stewardship drives. Lutherans who have never been on the church council claim they don't know what goes on at church council meetings. Lutherans who have been on the council claim they don't know either. Lutherans enjoy church suppers and will pay as much as $1.50 for the privilege of bringing the family to one. Lutherans believe in change when it is for the better. They oppose it unflinchingly when it is for the worse. Lutheran men aren't sure what Lutheran church women is or does, but they think it's a good thing. Lutherans believe in offering an honorarium to guest speaker. If he declines it, they believe in inviting him back. Lutherans wonder a lot about people named Olson or Schneider who belong to other churches. They also wonder about people named O'Brien and Gugliano who belong to Lutheran church. Lutherans usher better than Presbyterians, but not as well as Methodists. Lutherans don't think the church should abandon the principle of the tithe. They don't think the church should insist on it either. Most Lutherans believe in sending their children to Sunday school. Some Lutherans believe in bringing their children to Sunday school, and many Lutherans haven't noticed the difference between the two. Lutherans dress better on Sunday mornings than Unitarians. Many Lutherans think that black people whose first name is Luther might have been named after Luther Burbank. Lutherans know more hymns than Roman Catholics, but they don't brag about it. Lutherans are in favor of prayer in the schools, but are against politics in the pulpit. Lutherans believe it's okay to poke fun at themselves, for which we can all be thankful. If they wouldn't go along with this, they of course wouldn't let Bruce Gunnarsson write this in the Lutheran. Now the next two, the only two left. The first one is when the Environmental Protection Agency and all the regulations came in on any new developments. A fellow named Lyle Amlin said, you know, what would happen here if we had Genesis all over again? It goes like this. Recently, God announced in the media he was going to create Earth. The following report was taken from the Daily Heavenly News, December 6, 1974. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. He was slapped with a class action lawsuit by the Heavenly Protection Agency for failing to file an environmental impact statement with the agency. God was granted a temporary permit for heavenly portion of the project, but was issued a cease and desist order on the earthly part pending further investigation by the Heavenly Protection Agency. After filing his construction permit application, God appeared before the HEPA Council with his environmental impact statement to answer questions. When asked why he started the project in the first place, God said he simply liked to be creative. The council felt this was not adequate reasoning and God would have to explain further. God said he needed a place to put man on, and one member of the council, a woman, asked if he was being a male chauvinist. God said no, he wasn't, because he would make a woman from a man's rib. But that was worse, the woman said. Going on, God said he would make a light to shine over the earth, and this point never should have been brought up. One member of the council, an active member of the Sierra Angel Club, protested. How would the light be made? Would it be coal-fired or nuclear-fired generating plant? Would there be strip mining? What about thermal pollution, air pollution? God explained the light would come from a huge ball of fire. The council didn't really understand that, but gave provisional approval to the ball of fire, assuming, one, there would be no smog or smoke from the ball of fire, two, a separate burning permit would be required, and three, since continuous light would be wasteful of energy, it would be dark, should be dark half the time. God agreed, and he said he would make firmament amidst the waters. One ecological radical council member accused him of double talk, and the council tabled action until God could get a firmament permit from the Angelic Bureau of Land Management, rezoning approval from the Earth Council, and an earth excavating permit from the county council. The council asked if there would be only water and firmament, and God said, let the earth bring forth the green herb, and such as may seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after its kind. The council agreed as long as only native seeds were used. When asked about future developments, God said, let the waters bring forth the creeping creatures having life, and the fowl that may fly over the earth under the firmament of heaven. Here again, the council took no action, pending recommendations from the Fish and Game Commission, the Heavenly Wildlife Federation, and the Audubon Angelic Society. Everything appeared to be in order, and then God said he wanted to complete the project in 6 days. He was told this was completely out of the question, that HEPA would require a minimum of 180 days to review the application. An outside firm would have to be hired, paid for by God, to study the environmental impact statement for omissions, and then there would be a public hearing, easily taking 10 to 12 months before the final permit would be granted. And God said, to hell with it. Now, this is my final one. In this critical time of energy shortage, I have been examining methods of conserving and utilizing wasted energy. One of the areas of greatest potential has to do with jogging. Jogging has gotten to be a craze, so I thought that it was time to speak up for sitting. The runners claim that it improves health and gives one a euphoric high. It makes one younger and improves one's health and sex life. I wish to make a case for long-term sitting rather than long-distance running. I believe the energy expended and wasted in jogging today probably contributes significantly to our energy crisis. The crazy runners are burning up energy helter-skelter. And it isn't that I haven't tried running. I'm talking to you as a reformed jogger. I belong to Joggers Anonymous, J-A, pronounced yaw in Norwegian. I tried jogging when I lived in California. I would go out and jog every night outside of Davis, California. And every night I'd come home too pooped to pant, and I was just thankful I'd gotten home without having a heart attack or being waylaid by a mugger. And I never did develop a fondness for dry heaves. You probably already realize that runners and joggers are braggers. Some joggers have really become overbearing. Without your asking them, they tell you how many miles they run per day, per week, per month, and year. And after they finish with this fabrication, they tell you about their weight, blood pressure, and pulse rate. They really have a thing about pulse rate. They like to tell you it's 40 in repose, with a sort of smug expression.
And when they finish with this fabrication, they like to ask a non-runner what his or her pulse rate is. And I figured out a way to break them of this. Tell them that your pulse rate is the same as your body temperature, 98.6. Nobody has ever given a jogger a pulse rate as a decimal. And as you say this number, nonchalantly take another drink out of your peanut butter chocolate milkshake and take another big bite out of your Twinkie. This, the jogger will express horror and say, "That's terrible. You're in bad shape." And then you say, "Really?" And you hold your breath until your face turns red, and then roll your eyes back and slide down in your chair and make a gurgling sound. And I can assure you that the jogger will never ask you your pulse rate again. Sitters, unlike joggers, are very modest. They seldom talk about how great sitting is. They don't wear you out how telling you how good sitting is. All they say is, "Have a chair." Almost everybody can sit unless they've had a recent hemorrhoidectomy or an episiotomy. You can sit alone or with anyone in any kind of weather. You don't need special books to tell you how to do it or any kind of special equipment. In sitting, you don't even need a chair. Some prefer just a log or to sit under a tree or on the lawn. Some prefer a lazy boy rocker with certain life support systems. Now, it must also be healthy to sit. I've seen a lot of physicians and have a son that's a physician, and they're usually sitting. And if it weren't healthy, I don't think they'd be sitting so much. And they're making quite a bit of money sitting down, and with that kind of money, you know, they want to stay around and enjoy it for a while. That's why they sit a lot. Now, a word about the hazards. The comparative hazards of sitting and jogging. In a recent study, it was found that sitters have 92% less strained tendons, broken bones, twisted ankles, torn ligaments, and sore knees. The sitters are hit by 96% fewer cars. They are bitten by 82% fewer dogs. They step in 73% less dog dew. And they are hit on the head by 86% less starling and pigeon dung. Bridle paths for horses are now being taken over by joggers, and they don't want the horses on them. In fact, if now that horseback riders insist on using them on the bridle paths, they require the horses to wear diapers. Now I'd like to take a few minutes to examine the accomplishments of the joggers versus the sitters. First, let's look at the sitters. The great philosopher and teacher Socrates experimented with running in his youth, but he found that he continued tripping over his toga, and he took some bad spills. So he gave it up, concluding that running was not the act of an enlightened person. And thereafter, in all his teaching, he insisted that all the students remain seated during lessons, a tradition, incidentally, which continues to the present day. Beethoven, the musician, didn't go out running around. He sat on his piano stool. And Shakespeare, he wasn't out running on a midsummer night when he wrote a dream about it. And Newton didn't develop his theories running down the road. He was sitting under an apple tree. And I think of all the great Norwegian sitters. Bjorn Bjornsson, the novelist, and Grieg, the musician. They wrote their great compositions sitting down. And Dr. Hansen, who was the discoverer of the bacteria that causes leprosy, he did this in Bergen, Norway, sitting in front of his microscope. And Leif Erikson discovered America, sitting in a boat. And Edison, he was sitting down when he invented the light bulb and the phonograph. Our country didn't become great by jogging. People on horses pioneered it. I never saw a movie with John Wayne, Randolph Scott, or the Cisco Kid dressed in a tailored jogging suit and wearing special jogging shoes and running after a cattle rustler. And I ask you, how would it have looked if the Lone Ranger had slapped himself on his hip and shouted, "Hi-o, joggers, away!" They would have locked him up, and rightfully so. I say let the horses stay in the bridle path. Let the joggers learn to leap over the used horse feed. It'll give them some excitement on a dull run. As Marie Antoinette might have said, Let them wear boots. My final pitch on this subject is that runners can't get anything done. They are breathing so hard, fighting for every breath, just trying to keep from getting bit by a dog, or worrying about whether they'll make it home. They can't do anything else. With the pain they're feeling, they worry and wonder whether it's a heart attack or just gas. So my plea to the joggers is to do a cost-benefit risk analysis. Respect the energy shortage and conserve energy before it's too late. Help save America. I close with the immortal words of one of our more mortal presidents, our 30th president, Calvin Coolidge. I do not choose to run. I should say that at the 20th anniversary of a laboratory I directed at the University of California, they invited me back to give a talk. I gave them this talk because there's all kinds of joggers in it. And the fellow that introduced me was a former graduate student of mine named Steve. And when I finished, he said, Leo, you're full of sit. That's what he said.
School's out.